sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. Welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz, and it is episode 81. Finally, we had a week that was memorable, up 11% for the Dow and all sorts of good things happening, or was it? Was it just a short covering and a mutual fund cover and window dressing for the end of the year, which is marks the mutual fund end of year? Or was it really something that we could follow through because we had a rate cut of 50 basis points by the Fed and a global kind of cooperation, it seems, to do what they can to beat this thing up and really squash the bears and move stocks up from their lows? But nonetheless, we're going to find out because we have a gigantic, I mean, just a huge panel with us today with the Strategy Lab. This is that MSN money game, I guess you can call it, where we get $100,000 each of play money, unfortunately, to manage and to invest. And we started out in August of 2008, right when the market started to really tip over. And unfortunately, I guess the Dow is now down about 25 or 27% since then, and the S&P is somewhere in that neighborhood as well. And many of the players are underwater. I was underwater actually a bit till last week. I had held myself up through this whole debacle. Right now, we're up about 4% since that date, so about 30% better than the markets. And you can find out why. We'll talk about that in this episode. And of course, you could follow it not only on our website, but on the MSN Money website. One thing I want to mention before we get to the panel is that the second class for the Cyber Trading University, where I'll be teaching about portfolio mastery, how to hedge, how to protect profits, and how to really get some profits, will be taking place next week. So if you haven't signed up yet, make sure to hop on to over to the Disciplined Investor site and sign up. It's free, and I think we'll have a lot of fun. It's kind of a really neat way that we do it via WebEx. We're going to screen share, and you can ask questions, and what do you have to lose, right? All right, so I guess we'll get right to this conversation. A lot of people are going to be on the line, and I have so many questions to ask because I watch the portfolios, and sometimes they go very much opposite of what I'm thinking, and I wonder, what am I missing? Always trying to check what it is that we're doing in terms of our investing and making sure that we don't take an attitude that's kind of too cavalier or cowboyish, if you will, and doing things that are out of line with our current economic models, but making sure that we take every bit of information into our theory as portfolio managers and as investors to make sure that, again, that we're not missing something, that and something's not just sneaking by us. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes right in front of your face and you don't see it. So what a great asset to have, the Strategy Lab. And maybe I was thinking that what you could do is, as you're listening to this, you can go over to the Strategy Lab on MSN and take a look at the various portfolios as the various players are talking. This way you can get a good insight into what they're thinking. And when they're talking about the various stocks they're in their portfolio, you can kind of see how it all fits together. Just a thought. So when we get back, we're going to get right down to it. We're going to bring everybody online, and hopefully we'll have a good technical experience here with the Strategy Lab on episode 81 of The Disciplined Investor. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Corey from the AfraidToTrade.com site, and you're listening to my buddy Andrew Horowitz at The Disciplined Investor.
And as promised, we have a special edition of The Disciplined Investor podcast where we're going to really focus in on the MSN Strategy Lab because this week coming up, actually, we have all of us, there's all of us on the phone, I think many of us at least, are going to be at the Money Show in Washington, D.C. on a special panel that really focuses in on the Strategy Lab where we have an opportunity to answer questions and participate with the audience about what's going on with the current environment. And I thought what we'd do is kind of bring a little bit of that to you today. What I thought I'd do first is to turn over to Ron Pritchard, who's with Microsoft, and he heads up the MSN Money. He's the guy that we all submit our trades to and our Strategy Lab journals, and he makes them look really pretty and makes us look literate. So, Ron, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Andrew?
Good, thanks. Why don't you do me a favor and take over for a minute and kind of go through all the people on the phone. We have like six people on the phone here from the Strategy Lab, and maybe you could just kind of talk about their... asking about their strategy, a little introduction, and then we can go into some question, Q&A.
Sure, I'll give you a quick rundown. Strategy Lab on MSN Money is every 6 months we line up six traders, set them up with a portfolio online, ask them to trade and write, and show people how they make money. It's been pretty brutal. We started on August 1st, so it's been pretty brutal since then. But it's an excellent group. We're five of the six are about 10 points ahead of the market right now. That only translates to one that's actually making money, but over a short period, that's a pretty good survival rate. The six players that we have, and five of them will join us at the Money Show. We'll start with our champ from last round. We call him the skeptical capitalist, Vadi Yastvinsky, who is probably one of our most aggressive traders. And I don't know, maybe Vad can sum up real quick what his strategy really is. Everybody uses a different kind of different tactics for our game, so we get a good mix.
Yep. Thank you, Ron. As Ron mentioned, I used to be the most aggressive one. Now I don't think I am anymore. But I think the different it's a little bit of a different environment compared to the previous round, and where I was a little more aggressive, aggressively trading in and out. Now I'm a little more. Actually, if you look at the beta of my portfolio, probably the lowest one right now, and I have a lot of. Preferred stocks of financial companies that have a very low beta, and I also have a lot of buy-right to closed and ETFs. So right now I'm actually really playing for a market that doesn't have a real trend from now on to all the way to January. So I'm not expecting it to move much. So I'm going to just kind of cherry-pick a few companies here and there and try to get some alpha.
Very good. Another player will be with us in D.C. is, we call him the amateur, Jim Van Meerten. He won a reader competition running a portfolio over the first 6 months of the year. This round, he was actually our leader until recently. He's been mostly short lately, and it's cost him over the last couple of days. But Jim, can you sum up your trading, your strategy in a couple of sentences?
Sure. Basically, what I try to do is to swim with the tide. I try to look at the last month, the last quarter, to see what the overall market is doing, and then look for stocks that are going in the same direction that the market seems to be going, but, of course, are exceeding the return of the market. So lately, I've been short. If I look at all the stocks, even after today and yesterday's rallies, we're still about 20%, only 20% of the stocks are trading above their 20-day moving average. So basically right now my portfolio is short. I'm going to be looking at tightening up a few of my stop losses and taking off some of the profits. Like that, I'm not looking for a lot to happen in the market in the next 2 to 3 months, so I'll be taking some profits and cherry-picking a few stocks to go into to do that. But right now I'm still basically short because we're still below our 20-day moving averages. And I think we're going to stay there for a little while.
Very good. We'll introduce next Ken Cam. We call him our all-star team trader. He runs a site called Marketocracy.com and uses the work of a lot of readers there to find stocks. Ken, how do you sum up your strategy right now? You've got kind of a mix of, I think there's one big short in there, and then some stocks that you've held quite a while.
Well, I think there's no question that the landscape of the market has really changed this round versus the previous round. And so whenever this happens, I think it behooves all of us to reexamine all our basic assumptions. And for me, that means questioning whether I'm following the right guys still. I don't think there's any great investor who's really foresaw the depth of the change that has occurred in the past couple of months. But I am starting to see some very good investors figure out how to deal with this, and so you'll start to see some changes in my portfolio soon.
Good. We also have with us Howard Gold. Howard is the editor of MoneyShow.com. We call him NewsHound. He's a journalist by training, so that's a man after my own heart. Howard, you're pretty much picking off the news, aren't you?
Well, I mean, basically when we started out this round, I thought that the market might hit lows right around now. I agree that this market has really been brutal and treacherous. I am seeing some signs of bottoming out. I would not call a bottom, but I am seeing some signs. I think when I started out earlier, I had some ETFs and stocks that were positioned to really take advantage of the market rebound. I sold a couple of those, and I have increasingly gotten more protective of risk. I've been mostly using ETFs. I am beginning to see a couple of things that I'm interested in, and I probably will jump back in looking at things that look like they've had good technical movement over the last short period of time. Because I think in a market like this, you really can't look long term. I mean, you really have to look at what's strong, and you have to cut your losses really quickly.
Good. And I'll also introduce John Reese, who uses computer models to track, I think, mostly value stocks end up in the portfolio. He's done great in past rounds, kind of taking a beating at the moment, but sticking to his guns. John, do you want to explain how that works?
Sure, Ron. Basically, I have investigated the stock picking styles of some of the legendary investment gurus of the last 50 years, and I've implemented my best interpretation of their styles in computer programs that look at the market every day. The legendary investors include Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, David Drummond, to name a few. Most do have a value orientation. Even when there is a strong growth theme, there's still a value check on it so that they don't overpay. I've continued to select stocks from each of those gurus that consist of my portfolio. Over long periods of time, they perform very nicely. In this current round, value stocks have been tremendously beaten up, and all of these positions are taking a loss to it. Nevertheless, my long-term research is to, as Ron said, stick with my guns, continue to implement the strategy, because I know that results in the best performance over the long term.
Good. And last but not least, disciplined investor Andrew Horowitz, who's up 5.5% today in, 3 months? Which in this market's pretty amazing. And Andrew, I apologize for taking over your show, and I'll turn it back over to you.
No problem. It's our show today. So let me just, before we go on, I just want to mention something that next week is as you're listening to this over the weekend and through next week, the Money Show in Washington, D.C., great opportunity if you haven't done so. They're all over the country throughout the year. Make sure to get over to that. You can go over to themoneyshow.com. But, Howard, I know that the Strategy Lab conference, that one-hour panel, is going to be simulcast on the webcast, live on video. So when's that occurring?
That will be on Friday at 3 p.m.
Okay, so Friday at 3 p.m., get on your computers and check out this if you're not over in D.C., and check out the Strategy Lab panel. You just go to the Money Show, and it will be coming up live on the computer, and you can just watch it from there. So I have a couple of questions. Some things. Let me just generally. We all take things from a little bit of a different angle. A lot of us talking about how we've been very nervous in this market because it's been disastrous. I mean, I have this vision that the markets are, it's an 800-pound gorilla in its left hand. Is hedge funds, in its right hand is investors, and it's walking through the forest, smashing each of those against the trees. And it's whether it's up and the market is crushing short sellers, or whether it's down and it's just taking everybody out, piece by piece, and scaring the absolute wits out of everybody. I mean, is this even is this a market that anybody should really be investing in? I mean, Vad, what do you think, Vad?
Well, I always, I'm one of the guys that believes that in every market there is an opportunity. This one, however, I would note that this market is the first time in the many years where I actually, in the last month, spend a lot of time and a lot of my actual real money portfolio has been in cash. And the reason for that is exactly what you said. you know, the market gorilla, you know, kind of swinging everybody against each other, smashing everything left and right. Kind of, I mean, I looked at the interesting statistics on the hedge fund strategies and their performance over the last few months, and I talked to one of my prime brokers, and there were no funds, no strategies that made money last month except for pure shorts. So that kind of tells you if you want to be, I mean, you should be always kind of in the market. Otherwise, why? If you're playing the game, you have to play it. But on the other hand, you got to be very careful. But right now, actually, might be not a bad time to kind of start picking and nibbling around.
You know, the problem though is that everything that we know about investing, you know, John from your computer models, or Vod from your experience with the hedge fund, et cetera, Jim with all of your experience utilizing your tactics and techniques, and Howard watching the news, et cetera. The problem, and Ken, of course, running a mutual fund and having years of experience, the problem I'm having is, I hope I didn't leave anybody out there, but the problem I'm having is there are no strategies right now, generally speaking, you know, no dyed-in-the-wool, value, GARP, purely technical. There's nothing that is making any sense because of the government overlays, the deleveraging requirement, the currency debacle, the bankruptcies, the hidden assets, the CDOs, the massive... I mean, there's nothing that can work consistently, in my opinion, unless you are constantly bobbing and weaving and moving in and out because the rules keep changing. Am I wrong?
Well, I would like to add... This is Howard speaking. I think absolutely you're right for the six-month period, and I just want to thank Ron for inviting me to participate during this period. It's certainly been an educational experience.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But... Yeah, thanks a lot, Ron.
We do like you.
But again, the question of investing, I mean, I think what I didn't say initially is that really I see this Strategy Lab portfolio as 10 to 20% of any individual's portfolio. I think the broad array of their portfolio should be widely diversified investing. And, you know, the one asset class that has done pretty well that no one's really talked about has been bonds.
Well, because, you know, obviously it's, you know, they've done well, but people are very scared of those also because who knows if the company is going to be in business. But I agree with you. I mean, obviously.
I'm talking about a broad bond index fund of treasuries, corporates.
Yeah.
You know,
but Howard and everybody, listen, you know, diversification that we've all been taught was, you know, mutual funds with great diversification on an international basis, fixed income, real estate and all that. Aside from bonds, and I agree with you on that, but when we're talking about a long-term portfolio for people, we're oftentimes talking, well, I don't know, let's say 70, 30 stocks and bonds. The fact of the matter, any diversification hasn't even worked. In fact, I am so livid about the traditional mutual fund. You know, has anybody looked what Fidelity Magellan Fund is down this year?
It's about 50% or something.
50%. Well, I mean, after the last couple of days, maybe a little bit less. But let's call it 45%. 45%. You know, the great Ken Huebner, I keep picking on this guy, the great Ken Huebner, who was the greatest money manager ever because he had oil and commodities, couldn't get out. The fact is, the mutual funds couldn't get out. Am I wrong? I mean, Ken, you're a mutual fund guy, right? So what was it that happened here that and I'm not picking on your fund, I'm picking on the fund industry. What was it that happened that the average guy thought they were protected against these major and deep losses that turned out not to really be so?
Well, I think every investor has a style that they have perfected over a number of years and that they only change very reluctantly. So whatever Ken Huebner has done over the long term, it's going to take more than a month of underperformance or even bad performance to make him want to throw that all overboard and do something different. Now, what's really different here in the last couple of months is that what's driving the market has almost nothing to do with what the companies are doing and has everything to do with what Washington is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fundamentally don't think that that's something that lends itself to analysis. What the government has been doing the last couple of months is pretty unprecedented. I don't know anybody that could have anticipated the extent to which they have changed the rules. And I have a fundamental belief that they have managed to navigate us so that we will avoid the worst-case scenario. I think the case for a depression has been taken off the table. But there is going to be a lot of boiling around here until everybody gets comfortable with the new lay of the land and new opportunities come about. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen because, as I counted up, there's about $3 trillion of liquidity sitting on the sidelines. Banks don't make money holding on to cash. They're only doing that now because they're afraid, but they're not going to be afraid forever. And when that cash starts to be put to work, there will be great opportunities because a lot of things are cheap right now. I just don't know where that money is going to go yet.
Mm-hmm. So, John, do you think that we've seen the last of the blow-ups? I mean, do you think that there's something still lurking out there that's potentially going to undermine, what Ken's saying, which is basically a lot of the stuff has passed. A lot of that is, not all of it, but a lot of the stuff has passed. And, we have this great opportunity because all the cash infusion and cash on the sidelines. But is there something else that could really change that whole concept?
Well, I think it's likely because we haven't seen the extent of virtually anything yet in terms of revelations as we see the CDOs and other structured investments unwind. We still have a peek at it, but we don't know for sure how that's going to play out. So, yes, I think there could be a number of upsets. What I'd like to share with you, though, is that in my analysis of these legendary investors, and I look at the year-to-year performance over their track record, every single one has had a period where they have been down for one or more years in a row, either in an absolute basis or compared to a main index like the S&P 500. So almost every strategy at some point in time will be out of phase with the market for an unpredictable length of time, whether it's months or a couple of years, yet you're able to establish a very high long-term track record by sticking to the same strategy. So one of the questions being raised on this phone call is, should you stick to the same strategy in this environment? And if your goal is on the long term, not if you're trying to trade for, let's say, 1 month, 1 week, a few weeks, but if your goal is on the long term, 5 years, 10 years, I would argue, yes, you need to stick with the same strategy that's been successful in the past.
All right, well, I will respectfully disagree with you, and even though I think that that while I wouldn't suggest that you just take it all and chuck it right now, the concern I have is I have seen people come into my office with 401k plans, and they're now calling 201k plans, it seems, and it's pretty sickening. It really is. I mean, the idea that people will have to be working a lot longer. Ron, you get a lot of mail. I assume you get a lot of mail, or at least the
whole.
I mean, what are you hearing out there from the average guy that's kind of wondering what to do and what they're thinking?
Well, there's a lot of anger and a lot of betrayal, I think. There are a whole lot of people who started investing in the last 10 or 15 years, and we've seen, I actually just worked on a story with our mutual funds columnist, Tim Middleton, and we looked at the returns for the last 10 years. And basically, the market as a whole is trading where it was 10 years ago. We've been watching a lot of the sectors lately in the S&P and even in the bond world and almost across the board. Some of them were way up, some were way down, but now everything's coming back to where it was 10 years ago. I think the real question for not the person who does a lot of trading, but the more everyday investor who trades maybe a couple of times a month, 401k, those kind of things, is what are the next 10 years going to be like, and what can I trust long term? We were told when a lot of people got into 401ks, they're told, hey, they'll go up an average of 7 or 8% a year. You'll retire with a comfortable retirement. If you've just lost 10 years, where do you go from here? And I guess that would be my question for everybody is, how do you counsel the person who just said 10 years washed away and is going to retire in another 10 years?
Well, just as a point of reference, I wrote an article this week, and it's about this 401k plan and how $500 billion of 401k value has now been washed away through October. And now we have to extend out the average retirement age, and that brings up multiple concerns. The first thing is the guy that was supposed to retire that's not retiring is potentially going to cost the company a lot more money. That person is going to be a net saver versus a net spender. And the person that was supposed to be getting that job coming out of college or wherever they're coming from are not going to get that job. And those were supposed to be the spenders, not the savers. So we have this kind of really sick situation setting up here that we have the elder population that was supposed to be retiring extending. Now it's going to be costing companies a lot more money or someone a lot more money, and it's a real big concern there. But the second thing is that, just to let you know, because this isn't coming out till actually Sunday or Saturday or Sunday this week, in a couple of days from this recording, or day from this recording, Ron, you'll be receiving shortly, we are shorting the mutual fund companies. We believe that there is a tremendous real problem with Legg Mason, Franklin Templeton, Franklin Resources, as well as who's the other one we're doing? T. Rowe Price, in that there's going to be, when people start opening their statements in October, and most people haven't wanted to look, and you know, they start pulling out money. The fact is that most mutual funds now are starting to waive their fees on their money market funds, one of the most lucrative and most margin intensive products. And the government now came with $540 billion, well, the Fed did, from somewhere, we don't know where, to lend to them. And you add that to the fact that their fee generally are down by 50%, and there's a tremendous exodus from mutual funds and anger. And it seems to add up to me to be a real problem from mutual funds. And we're short in our real portfolios, as well as starting tomorrow, we'll be short all three of those companies in the Strategy Lab portfolio.
Yeah, not bad.
Sorry, Ken. I feel bad saying that. You still there, Ken?
Yes, I'm here. You know, I'm not sure I answered your other question, but I think one of the flaws in typical mutual fund companies is they really only can execute one strategy well.
Mm-hmm.
So when the world changes like it recently has, they really can't do anything different. And so it does behoove the shareholders to watch for those times so that they take their money out of the funds that may not have the skills that are necessary to do well in the new market environment. It
mm-hmm.
might be years before the, you know, some of those styles come back into favor. That's one of the reasons why at Marketocracy we don't just follow one style. We're following thousands of people,
mm-hmm.
and what we are trying to find are the people who have the great long-term track records whose styles are beginning to work now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to steer our fund. So
right.
We are, I think, better prepared to change styles when the market changes than almost any other mutual fund.
That's good. So, Jim, let me ask you something. Jim, you've had a lot
yeah.
of volatility lately, and you know, you were the market, when it came down, you went short. It was great timing, awesome timing. The market kind of all of a sudden turned its heels and kind of went the other direction on you a little bit, on everybody. I mean, not just you, obviously. It's kind of, you know, tomorrow could be down 1,000 points. I mean, the way things are going these days. So your strategy basically is to look at long-term trend lines and to find out, you know, kind of where things are in terms of their 10, 20, 50, whatever, you know, whatever you're using at any particular moment. So looking at that strategy, with the markets moving in such a dramatic fashion in a let's just say daily basis, right? Do you think mm-hmm. that strategy is still can work in terms of because if we're looking at averages, right? You know, you're looking at a long-term average, let's say 50 days, 30 days. The market's cratering on a two-week period, 2,000 points, 1,000 points, 800 points. You know, you're going to get some skewing of those averages, or at least the current values. And therefore, if the market does come back up sharply, it could really put you behind, or the other way around. It could really, you know, make you move quickly the other direction, right? So,
right.
You know, what do you think that, you know, that you would adjust, if you would adjust? I don't know if you would, but if you would adjust anything.
Right now, I'm not going to adjust. And the reason why, you guys have alluded to, you know, what the next big shoe is to drop. You mentioned the 401ks, the mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
Now realize that these are things that people can get in and out of and do something about.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next big shoe to drop, and I look for this shoe to drop in February and March of next year, and that is that nobody is addressing the defined benefit plans. The defined benefit plans are going to have to report their results at the end of the year to all the people that have the defined benefit plans, and I look for there to be about a reporting of between $200 to $250 billion losses in these defined benefit plans. They have been looking at, in the past, 5 to 8% returns as being their internal rate of return, and you're going to find that the defined benefit plans are just woefully underfunded. And when those reports start to come up, and you'll read the footnotes in these plans, you're going to see a lot of people have anxiety about their defined benefit pension that they always thought was solid. I was talking to some airline pilots last year when they were worried about their airline going bankrupt. And these guys had defined benefit plans that were going to pay them pensions of around anywhere from $125,000 to $150,000 a year. They went to a union meeting and found out that if their defined pension plan went under and it went to the guaranteed benefit plan, that their maximum pensions were going to be between $26,000 and $45,000, that was the maximum that they could have. So you've got two things coming up. One is that these defined benefit plans are woefully underfunded.
Wait, let me interrupt you. So what is that? Let's talk about that. So what does that mean? I mean, who has to pay for that?
Well, what's going to happen is that funding has to come out of the future earnings of those companies. Now,
that's pleasant.
Let's just say we've got this problem. Not only do we have the problem that the companies that continue to have profits, they're not going to be able to share those profits with their shareholders through dividends, and that those things are have to be given to the defined benefit plans. But what about those people whose companies may not get through this recession, and that their defined benefit, their company goes bankrupt at a time when their defined benefit plan is underfunded, and the government takes it over and says suddenly this nice pension you were counting on of $45,000, $55,000, $60,000, we're now going to pay you $23,000, $24,000 a year. That's the big shoe that I see going to drop, and it drops in March and February when they have to report their annual results, and you're going to see those footnotes. A lot of people reading footnotes about underfunded defined benefit.
But the effect also is going to be, if that is the case, the effect will clearly be on corporate earnings, but more so, and we could do a little projection of that into that, but really the big effect will be on the economy too, right? Because then you're going to have all these people that just can't spend money because they don't have the money to spend.
That's right.
That's right.
Beautiful. I love that. Bob, you going to say something?
Yeah, this is Bob here. And I have a lot of comments. I've kind of been sitting quiet. But taking just the last issue, for example, about the defined benefit plans, I do agree that it's an issue. I don't think it's the major one. I think what people have to realize, and I mean, we have to kind of put all their prior knowledge and prior kind of beliefs aside. Two things are going to happen that they have changed, and I think that have been changed pretty much for forever. Number one, we're going to have to pay higher taxes. Number one, I mean, that's pretty much a given. And regardless of who becomes a president, the taxes are going to have to go up
Good thing I don't have a mute button right now, buddy.
I know. I'm just trying to be realistic here. You know, that's number one. Number two is people are going to have to work longer. And, you know, I mean, so the defined benefit problem is definitely a problem. But if you look at the actual data, say there, I mean, there, what's the Pension Guarantee Corporation, the company, I mean, the government-owned fund that takes over all the liabilities for companies Jim mentioned, go bankrupt, and they're bankrupt, I mean, and their pensions are taken over. PBC, Pension Benefit Corporation. And, I mean, I look at their numbers. Yeah, they project that if the returns stay the way they are, say 40% negative for the year, they're going to have to increase, double their contribution. The companies, they're going to have to double the contributions from the companies that are, you know, still contributing to it. So if the company, say, was contributing 2% annually, they're going to have to contribute 4%. It is a big impact. 2% margin is a huge impact. However, I think the more realistic scenario that is going to happen is we're going to print more money. That's what's happening right now. We're printing a lot more money. We're going to have to pay for it eventually. And number two is people are going to have to work 10 more years than they're expected to.
Yeah. Good. Howard, let me ask you something, Howard. I hope I'm getting everybody equal timing here. So recently, just kind of some recent things that I was observing, you recently, I think your last transaction was to, you know, move out of oil, and I think you went long the yen. Is that a correct statement?
Yes. Well, actually, I did buy oil and then sold it a week later because I thought I'd made a mistake, which I think I did because I think oil is down a little, was down a little bit today. Yeah, I mean, basically, what I've done in my portfolio was to kind of, I saw that the strong points were a couple of the currencies. The dollar has been strong, and I bought an ETF, UUP, PowerShares DB U.S. Dollar Index Bullish, which really moves with the dollar index against six other currencies. And I see the yen there, you know, one thing I think people haven't mentioned too much, tied with a mega trend, is the unwinding of the yen carry trade, in which people borrowed in low interest rate yen in order to invest other places. This was hedge funds did this. They are now unwinding that. I mean, hedge funds are getting clobbered. I mean, this whole thing, I don't know if people have been reading about this. Porsche made this surprise.
Oof, that was ugly, huh?
Yeah, it may have cost hedge funds $20 billion covering their short. Some of the best hedge funds were involved in some of this. I mean, no matter what they do is not working. They have
they have $1.8 trillion of assets, and their estimates that a third of them may disappear. Now, I don't think the government is going to really help them, but I do think that it's going to have an impact on the market because they are basically selling whatever they can, and I think that's why some of the better stocks, the big-name stocks, were hit in recent weeks before the recent rally, because hedge funds were selling whatever they could in order to raise money.
Yeah.
Stephen A. Cohen, one of the most successful hedge fund managers of the last 20 years, is almost all in cash now.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's because he can't find anything to buy. I'm telling you, it's because he needs cash.
Right.
They all need cash right. because they're getting calls for redemptions from some of the people.
Right.
And that's a process that's going to happen, I think, over the next 3 to 6 months. And
mm-hmm.
it's a big wild card in the market. I mean, it can throw any of our strategies off kilter.
Out of whack. So, Ron, you track the news as well. And the recent news out today, the last couple of days, has been that I think the number, correct me if I'm wrong, but $70 billion, approximately $70 billion of the TARP, the $750 billion that the government, by the way, have we all noticed that the government has been in almost every conversation that we've had about rescuing, helping, being involved in, coming to the rescue of almost everything we've talked about today? It's sickening.
Problem.
It's sickening.
That's exactly why everything is happening. I think everybody's forgetting how we got into this mess.
Right. And it's our own thing, and you can't have this. But Ron, let me ask something. So did you read or see that $70 billion of the TARP is going to be used for bonuses and salaries for the 9 banks that are currently involved?
I have. In fact, we're desperately watching that to try to get some of those names, because I think there'll be a lot of interest in it. It's really an interesting question. Both the New York Attorney General Cuomo and a lot of people in Congress are working hard to try to get the names of and just what these executives are going to get. You have a lot of people who got off pretty much scot-free, like Angela Mozilla, the CEO of Countrywide. I think he made $300 million over 3 years as the company tanked. Taxpayer money going to that is going to be something I think is going to outrage a lot of people over this next year. And I think that anger is going to keep this from going away. One thing I've been wondering about lately is, if a lot of the market's drop is due to hedge funds going to cash, what happens if all those people with 401ks start going to cash?
No, I think that's happening. I think that's going to happen next month.
It is happening, too. I have to say I've seen redemption. I mean, the amount of mutual fund redemption in September was a record in October.
Yeah.
Ahead of September. So we could see $150 billion in redemptions coming up over the September.
And that's where my thesis comes in, because most of these mutual funds, because they had some blow-ups with the Lehman CD, the commercial papers that blew up or were or not paying, many of the mutual funds, they make a lot of their fees on the money markets because it's such, they've always made such a great, it's a nothing to do. They basically no management, but yet they have to make up this big loss. So what they're doing is, to keep it from going under the buck, they're waiving their fees. So you take all the money out of their funds that they're losing money on to begin with, move it into the money market funds is the first stop that they're going to go. I don't understand how they're going to make money, but that's just me. Many of them dropped 50% already, but the recent pickup, I think, gave us an opportunity to pick up. We shorted some of these right now. But let me head over to Ken. Ken, I have an interesting question. A lot of people are watching, and I think that and I say this not, again, to anybody here, because you can pick on me the same thing. Everybody can talk to me about the same thing. When a stock starts running away, pick any – I don't care if it's your stock or any stock. The average – I was just looking over a piece of paper. A lot of people, what happens is we get the whole point of a stock's at 25 or I don't care the price. All of a sudden it's at 30. Well, we have our imprint that it's at 30. Now, all of a sudden it's at, let's say, 24, 22, 21, and we have this magical 30 in our mind. When is the time to sell that stock? I mean, is there a time?
You mean when the stock is going against you?
Or? Yeah, going against you, and it starts going against you, and it starts going against you, and it keeps going against you to a point that it's like, when is this going to stop? When is the time that we finally say, if I can get out of it, all right, fine. I'll take it out. I'll maybe put a sell stop in or whatever. Is there a time that the average guy should be really, or if the professional should be saying, this is enough already. I've taken enough of beating. I'm going to move out of this position. And maybe my understanding of what's going on is wrong.
Yes, I think that's exactly the test. I don't think it's a measure of just how much you've lost. I know a lot of people do like stop losses, like 5 or 10% of the, below where they bought the stock.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think that if you would sell the stock 5 or 10% below the price at which you bought it, you never had enough conviction in that name to make it an investment anyway. It was always really a gamble, and you really didn't know enough about it to make it be a good investment. Now, The time, however, when you do need to make a change or when you do need to cut your losses is when something has changed so that you no longer see the same upside in the stock. And, you know, in biotech companies, when they blow up, it's because the drug proves to be ineffective.
Right.
Right. And when that happens, you know, it's going to blow up. And, you know, whatever the price you thought it was worth, it's now proven to be worth less. It's never probably going to go back to what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what you were counting on, then you really don't have any reason to stay with it.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, what's going on now, I'd like to go back to what Howard said. I think a lot of the selling is going on, not because of what's happening in the companies, but because people have to meet redemption requests, and so they have to sell what's liquid. Now, a lot of these hedge funds that have had these redemption requests, they're just stuffed to the gills with these illiquid subprime securitized mortgage stuff that cannot be sold.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to sell the liquid names, and they have to take whatever prices they can. When the prices are falling because of that kind of selling, that's not a reason to sell. That's a reason to buy. And you have to be careful so you don't get out in front of that train. But it is also not a reason to panic that you are wrong about all the stocks that you have in your portfolio.
Yeah, I hear you. But it got and it is pretty scary, you know, watching money, real money, disappear here. So, but John Reese, let me ask you that, because we've seen, you know, you, if I'm not mistaken, Ron, John was the early leader.
He was, I think, right, exactly. And it was doing quite well before this month. He does one debt rebalancing each month. And this, I don't know if it's timing or the choices, but this month has been really tough on him.
I will tell you, he could have picked the best stock in the world this month, and it would have been bad. I mean, it doesn't matter. So, John, you're probably, right about now, you're starting to work on, or you have worked on, your rebalance, right?
Actually, the rebalancing will occur on Monday.
So, because this is not going to be aired until then, can you tell us some, well, it'll be aired Sunday, but can you tell us some of the things that are going on in terms of maybe sectors?
No, the actual decisions won't be made until this weekend. So I won't be able to publicize the sectors or the stocks actually until Monday.
But is anything actually looking good anyway? I mean, is anything, I mean, you know, I guess some of the, I got to tell you something. I thought that we just did a study on the material companies, which have been obliterated, to say the least. You know, I mean, I looked at Caterpillar the other day. I said, did that stock split? You know, I mean, what happened to the share price? You know, I'm kidding around, but it's really unbelievable. But the materials companies.
Well, you're right. For instance, one materials company and fabricated parts is Kennan Metal, KMT, was looking really good. You have a $2.5 billion firm that gets long-term orders, is profitable, and is selling at a huge, huge discount to a normal price.
And is that because of the, that's probably because of the projections out, but what was interesting is when we did the study on the top 10 in this one portfolio that we have, we looked at the top 10, actually of the ProShares materials fund, we looked at the top 10 positions, and 8 of the 10 beat earnings in the last 2 weeks, although most have projected down. You got Alcoa, DuPont number one, you have, I think Caterpillar's in there. They all beat earnings handily in the last quarter up until now, and are all projecting down, but it was kind of quite astonishing how close all of them, except for Alcoa, was in the recent results. I mean, I thought that was pretty amazing, and that may go to Ken, what you were saying, that the, you know, many of these companies are still doing okay or have been doing okay. Although I will say that I think in October, I just got off the phone with someone, and they work for a very large company, and they said that sales have dried up in October considerably. I mean, considerably. So, I mean, you know, Jim, I mean, have you been looking at any of the, you know, the earnings results of some of these companies and seeing what's going on there in terms of forward looks? And does that figure into some of these shoe droppings and maybe some of the precursor to some of the things that you're thinking about?
Well, I'm noticing that there's, you know, three things that are going on. One, of course, is the general economy. The other is the earnings of the individual companies. And then the third is all this fluff, this news that's going on. People can now sit and read almost instantaneously everything that's happening. And we see just totally irrational trading going on, like we saw recently with Volkswagen. Did anybody see what happened to Hartford today?
Ooh, that was rough.
Hartford lost one half of their market value.
And so the Cigna went down pretty. What is the story on that? Because I didn't read the news on that, actually. I just saw the numbers.
The story isn't there yet because it was just a total overreaction. I've been noticing. I flip from one channel to another, you know, on my computer from CNBC over to MSN.com. And I'm amazed that sometimes I'm looking at the chart on the left-hand side of the page. And the latest headline that just came up in the last 10 minutes is exactly the opposite of what the chart's telling me. You know, they're saying, hey, oil is down, so the stock's going up. And then I look, and the stock's going down. But today, I really got one that really got me. Briefing.com had a headline that put it all in the same sentence. Gains remain healthy, but major indexes continue trending downward. How do you have healthy results at the same time that everything's trending downward? So the news, right now, news, an overreaction to the news, is what's driving this market. I really think that if this contest were 2 years long, John has the advantage because value investing right now, there are bargains there. Everything is so oversold that even though I in my heart believe that there's still some more profits to be made in short sales, I don't think there's big profits to be made because the whole market right now, I think, is very oversold. And you're right, these earnings reports are coming out, and if you just click on the new high list just today, there has to be at least 100 to 150 companies that have reported new high in earnings, but yet there's only about a dozen companies that have reported new highs out of the whole 12,000 companies that were traded. Now, that just shows that earnings aren't being appreciated.
Well, but that also shows, if I may, and Val, I know you wanted to say something, but doesn't it show that the earnings are a little backward-looking? I mean, some of the numbers we're looking at in terms of all the different economic studies that we're seeing, I mean, you cannot tell me that GDP, this is the first quarter that GDP is negative that we just saw. I mean, come on.
I mean, but you see, that's exactly the issue with Vlad here. I mean, and I'm kind of sitting quiet. I do have a lot of thought, but
which is hard for you, Vlad, right?
I know. It's quick note on Hartford. I mean, the reason Hartford was down, it was actually very logical, and you could have easily been predicted. The insurance companies, I mean, they are really an big investment vehicles. So they collect premiums. They try to kind of break even their underwriting income, and then they just make money off of investments. What do you think happens when their portfolio drops 30-40%? All of a sudden, they thought they had $100 billion to pay claims. They got 60, and their rating companies, which I think are responsible for 90% of this mess, are going in there and saying, okay, you have to raise $5 more billion to keep your rating. So, okay, forget about this. Let me tell you something about. I'm not going to be as negative as most of the. You know, I guess we have a lot of negative kind of comments. I'm going to try to cheer.
I would just like to disagree with you. I think that most people have been generally somewhat positive and more. And I'm kind of puzzled by that, to be honest with you. I think that generally speaking, I think Howard, you're a little bit negative on things. I think Jim, you're kind of positive on things. John, I think you're, if I may say so, kind of neutral and kind of doing your thing and investing the way you do. Ken, you seem a little bit, I think, neutral to positive on things. And I am unabashedly negative because I am looking at what seems to be a historic economic implosion on a worldwide basis when I see countries going almost under and commodities going through $100 swings on oil. And, I'm not really understanding how we're going to get out of this mess right now. And if you tell me, because the government's going to step in, I don't understand where they're going to get the money from, but that's a different story. But I don't think there's been, Ron, tell me, do you think there's a little bit more of a positive tone than a negative tone?
I think so. I think if you're thinking in terms of investing, I think it's tough now because, you know, I think I agree with everybody, what I'm hearing from everybody. There's a lot of great buys out there. But I also look at the market every day, and it doesn't seem to be trading with any relation to that. It's all, what I've noticed the last couple of weeks, you guys may agree or disagree, is if some government comes out and says, here's a bunch more money, or somebody's going to cut interest rates and make money cheaper, the market goes up. If government doesn't take action, the market goes down. And that's just a weird world that we're in.
Yeah. What were you saying, Ben?
But it's all, I mean, Ron, and And Andrew, I mean, I do a little bit disagree with the statement that people are positive. And people might be positive somewhere deep in heart, but I mean, look at all the comments that have been made. Okay, the comments have been made. The hedge fund redemptions are going to keep coming in. Mutual funds redemptions are going to keep coming in. The countries are going to blow up. The currencies are not doing too well. The government, you know, their pension benefits are going to get negative. I mean,
but that's much more positive than it's been.
Right. Here's what I can say. And hedge fund redemption, number one, I just got fresh data an hour ago from TrimTabs. Yeah, I mean, if you look at historically, the highest redemptions, you know, the time when people are really redeeming money is really historically the best time to buy. And yes, you know, $1.3 trillion hedge fund industry had a lot of redemptions, but that's a big chunk of it has passed already. And the average mutual fund right now is 16% in cash. So even... I mean, 16% redemption for mutual funds is completely. I mean, I just don't think that's it's even possible at this price. I mean, a lot of people when they get and see their portfolio 40% down, they're like, why the hell would I take it out anyway? And even the ones they do, there's plenty of cash out there. I think the actual wave of redemption is pretty much we're nearing the end of the redemption. There is no doubt in my mind that redemption caused. I mean, I would say at a 40% way down in the last 3 months. Majority, more than half, is purely driven by deleverage, which in turn means redemptions. And what that means, if you ask me what the strategy is right now, I don't think you can just buy something and hold it, because I think a year from now we're going to be somewhere where we are today and as far as stocks go. But, I mean, trading within this, being a little more active than buy and hold, there are a lot of opportunities. I mean, as you have seen in my strategy due to several reasons. I mean, I was down almost, you know, 40% a month ago.
So what was the main reason that you think you made that big comeback?
The main reason was because I mean, if you look through my articles, they said that first of all, media is being way too negative.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to flip over a little bit too positive. So because of all that media-driven fear, plus combined with the redemptions by hedge funds, I mean, my strategy is quant. So when it's quant, it means I have a lot of similar holdings to the, you know, if you look at Goldman Sachs top 50, you know, hedge fund owned business, I mean, companies, I have owned a lot of those companies. They got hammered, but I saw that the hammering is going to continue. So I just picked the stocks that I knew. I sort of arbitraged away. What mm-hmm. I'm doing right now, I'm looking for the stuff that is being sold.
Right.
And it's being sold clearly at a reasonable pace.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason is liquidity.
Right.
And that, you know, and that's going to snap back.
Yeah. So let me ask a tough question. First of all, Ron, I'm going to ask you a very tough question, and that is, why is on a day that the market was up, is Microsoft down and Yahoo up?
Oh, I don't know. Microsoft's been wasting away for quite a while. I think it's probably this is a smaller version of what we saw when Microsoft tried to buy Yahoo. Microsoft went down, Yahoo went up. I think there's a lot of speculation that's going to happen again at these lower prices.
I love that, because I have a big position of Yahoo in my portfolio.
Yeah, I've noticed. I
don't think they're going to get the price. I think
all I want them to get is 20. I'm happy as a clam.
I think that first offer probably looks pretty good on the Yahoo campus right now.
Yeah, no kidding. So let me kind of go through another hard question, then we're going to wrap it up here. And just to remind everybody that we are all going to be at the Money Show, or many of us at the Money Show next week. But also, you can track all of this discussion and commentary. It's some great stuff. I mean, there's some great minds here that are giving you all their theory and discussion, why they're doing things at the Strategy Lab. Just type in Strategy Lab, Microsoft. Go to my site. I have a link right there to it at the Discipline Investor. And we'll have links, of course, in the show notes for this podcast, to everybody's website and to all the people that are on this call. And you can find out, we'll have biographies on them and find out a little bit more about them. But what I do want to ask in closing is, I think a tough question, because I'm always looking, you know, I attended a conference, and at the time, the mutual fund manager for Fidelity Magellan Fund at the time, which was the flagship of Fidelity, was Robert, I always forget his last name. And he said something that I thought was very profound. He says one of the things that he really does all the time is to look in his portfolio. He knows there's a dog in there. He knows that one stock is the worst stock and is going to be the worst stock in his portfolio, and he makes it a practice to always look and try to seek it out and really fetch it and get rid of it. And if he could do that on a consistent basis, he will, you know, kind of, you know, get rid of some of the the implosions. One of the things that I did wrong in the strategy lab in particular has been the use of my sell stops to protect me with the wide variation of pricing. I got called out on a few positions very quickly. I think during that same day I placed the trade, I kept going getting whacked out of the trade because I would use, even though wider than I thought, 12% downside protection, but these things are swinging, you know, with all this market volatility, 20%. So I put in a trade and I try to do it off of market hour, you know, after the open, and I try to do everything right, but I keep getting whacked out of it. So I'm, you know, a point here, 2% there, 1% there, kind of was bleeding me slowly until I did something and switched it around entirely and did actually the exact opposite of that and made a huge run with a couple of positions recently. But that was one of the big mistakes that I made there. But I think that it's helpful for investors to understand and acknowledge their mistakes and to kind of you know, just kind of look at it's not a situation of beating up on somebody, but if we could figure out what we're doing wrong and figure out the dogs that we're doing, we can maybe figure out how to really make things run right, right? So I'm just going to go up the list here. Howard, if you can kind of think about one thing that you, in this whole process, that you maybe would have done differently, what would that be?
Not buy IBM.
Okay.
Now, I cut losses on IBM and Qualcomm fairly early, which was good. I think in general, what I think I would have done is probably not have bought at the very beginning some of the things that I thought would benefit from a market rebound when I still thought the market was going to bottom. And so I'm sort of sitting there with a mid-cap growth ETF, things like that, that's down a lot. I may reduce one of my positions over the fairly soon, but what I'm doing is I'm not really selling when they're really, really low. I'm really waiting till they come back a little bit and then trying to, if I want to get rid of them, I'll get rid of them then.
Okay, so the answer was not just to invest, I think what you just said, and then to look a little bit more objectively at the timing of the investment. Is that a correct statement?
I think that's about right, yeah.
Okay. Jim, what about you?
Well, I found that as I'm shorting and I'm looking at some stocks, I'm shorting because I think those stocks will be going down. Unfortunately, on a few of them, what's happened is somebody else said, gosh, that stock is so far down, it's a bargain, and then takeover candidates come in and bid the price up on me.
Mm.
So I've had a couple of the stocks that I looked at that actually they were good short positions, but then when somebody offered to take them over, the price spiked for a few days, and I lost some pretty good money on those. But those are unpredictable, so I'm going to continue to carry about 20 stocks. So if one happens to have that happen again, it won't hurt me, and I'm still going to stick with my stop losses being at approximately the 50-day moving average.
So to summarize that point, I think what you're saying is that in this market of unpredictability, it's created a little bit more difficulty for you to utilize a strategy that you have confidence in, because a lot of outside influences well beyond normal are kind of hitting you in the head with some of the movement, and whether or not they're rightfully beneficial because things are so out of whack and out of normality, that's kind of, you've had to rethink a little bit of that. Is that correct?
That's it. Okay. What I was doing would work good if you have a good long-term trend that lasts about a quarter, but doesn't work in a choppy market like we're having right now.
In a quote-unquote normal market. John, what about you?
I am the archetypical disciplined investor. Steady Eddie, I would still continue to employ the strategies that worked in the long term. I would not change that, and I do not know in advance which particular stocks that I pick will go up or down, but I still adhere to the same strategy and methodology regardless of how choppy or how down the market is.
Okay. So I think what you're saying, I think I'm just summarizing, is that you are, I don't think you said there's anything that you would do differently, right?
Correct.
Okay. I want to make sure I got that straight. Okay. Okay. Okay, you got that straight. So you said there's nothing that you would do differently no matter, you know, what the up or downside was. Okay, gotcha. Because you believe that long term that it will play out right. Is that what that's what you said?
Correct.
Okay,
that
gotcha.
Is correct.
Aside from obviously owning Microsoft stock, Ron, anything that you would help us out with?
My best decision is not to actually be running a portfolio.
I love that. Sitting on the sideline and watching us blow up, right?
There have been a lot of very interesting plays that I've never seen before this round as you guys try to survive. And I think it's been very instructive.
Yeah, I think we're all being rather acrobatic. And
I'll tell you, Ron, I've never thought in my life that I never thought in my life I'm going to become an expert with preferred stocks, but I now have built a model that actually is trying to arbitrage away different opportunities for the preferred stocks, and it's been just pretty amazing to watch. What are you going to do to try to stay positive? I've never been negative, and just being living a little bit negative kind of forced me into doing some things I would never thought I would do.
I think preferred stocks actually were the front page of Barron's, a newspaper I used to respect, last week or so, and preferreds are kind of cool. I had them early on. I think if I remember, I had them early on in my portfolio, and I made a couple of bucks on them, but not a big enough position to make any substantial gains, and then kind of cut them because they started to fall back a little bit. Vod, aside from that, so what do you think that you would do differently, or what do you think that would be very instructive to change?
I know exactly what I would do differently. Number one, I wouldn't take a vacation when the market is going up. That would be number one, to come back and see that you are losing by double digits. But number two would be, even if you go, I believe in stop losses, and my little vacation there when I left without stop losses got me a little bit off track. But generally what I would do is definitely be a little stricter with my stop loss policy. And if you see the strategy doesn't work, which regular equity long short strategy does not work, at least it didn't as of the end of last week.
Mm-hmm.
A little back to normal.
Right, normal. Mm-hmm. I asked my staff.
It's normal. It's normal with parentheses.
Yeah, I asked my staff just yesterday. I said, "What are we gonna do when this market calms down? I'm gonna fall asleep in the middle of the day. This stuff is just, it's kind of like every time you look around, it's like I keep saying, oh my God, every time I look at the screen, which is, I got a lot of screens around me, and it's just unbelievable. It's like a Christmas tree that keeps on lighting up around me with all the news alerts and things that are going on. It's just extraordinary. Ken, Cam, what do you what's your thoughts on what you would do differently?
Well, most times we talk about what a normal market is like, and most times market moves up or down by big swings on the basis of no news. And for the usual times, you can just afford to ignore that and focus on what's going on in the company. This is not one of those times. I mean, I think what we've seen here is so big and so far-reaching that it's dominated, stock price movements far, far more than anything that the company could do. So my normal focus on just looking at what the companies are doing and having confidence in the companies has not worked that well this round. And I guess if I could do it differently, maybe I would have a finer hair trigger on when I would call the end to one realm of the market and move to a different model.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are in a different model now. I think there is no chance that the companies that led the market for the last 5 years will resume leading the market when the fear subsides.
Yeah.
I don't know where the market leaders are going to be yet, but there's a tremendous amount of liquidity on sidelines, and I don't think that it's going to stay there for very long. I don't know where it's going to go, but it is going to go somewhere. Right now I'm seeing, opportunities not in stocks, but in the corporate bonds, and somewhat like what Dad is doing, looking at the preferred stocks.
Yeah, I know. I think people are shell-shocked, and it's going to take a while. I mean, it's hard. Like I said, I mean, we all know this. It's very difficult to look at the situations that have occurred, and people are it always takes a while. But then we forget. We all forget, what we did and the problems with it. But I think that it's going to take a while for people to get over that and to trust it again. Last time this happened, by the way, we had an outlet. If you remember, we had an outlet of real estate. That's why one of the reasons the real estate market was so dramatically enhanced and kind of adored was because the people are always looking to make a profit. But since we obliterated that and we obliterated the stock market right now, there will be something. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Beanie Babies will come back or something. But there'll be something that will actually actually occur. And but let me just summarize, Ken. I think what you were saying was that maybe it's Kenny Rogers said you're gonna maybe look at when to know when to hold them, when to fold them. And to look a little bit more objectively at the markets. Is that what you said?
I think that's a fair summary.
All right, okay. And Vod, I don't know what you said. I'm way back to that. I don't know if I summarized your point, though, but I think that you're not going on vacation anymore. That's what you said.
That's right. I'm definitely not going on vacation. So actually, right now it's probably a little easier because the preferred stocks have a little lower volatility, but I'll tell you, this is a lesson for everybody. I mean, especially if you're short. Actually, the things that blew up on me most were short position. You cannot afford to have, I think shorting is a very, I mean, it's not an exercise that everybody should be using, because
yeah.
you never know when the government is going to get involved and kind of restrict it.
I hear you. Well, we'll look forward to a few more months. Ron, when is this particular, let's kind of just flush this out. When is this strategy lab, when is the bell going to ring on this one? What's the date?
Well, we run 6 months at a time. We don't set the date way ahead in advance, but it'll be mid-February. So you have a little more time to make up ground.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only halfway through, so it'll be interesting.
Okay, good. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll make sure to provide you all with, you know, how you can listen to this conversation. Great stuff. I mean, I think that, you know, getting it from every angle, all different professionals and amateurs and, you know, you're a professional to me, Jim. I think that hearing it, I think a lot of people need to hear, you know, that what's going on, what to do, how to do it, different ways to do it. And it's extremely helpful because we're in a very trying time. And I think that everybody can use a little hand at, you know, what's going on with this. And I appreciate it. And thank you, Ron, for providing this opportunity for not only us, but for the average Joe and Jane out there to really get a sneak peek at what's happening. Because I don't think there's many opportunities for investors and people, especially novices, to really look into what's happening and really understand what's going on. Because most mutual funds are closed, hedge funds are closed. I mean, where can you find out the thoughts and thinking of some fine minds like we have here today? And I am very encouraged by you know, hearing a lot of things that you're talking about. I look forward to seeing everybody in D.C.
Very good.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, that was a great episode, and thank you so much for Microsoft again, MSN, for providing that great platform. If you haven't had the opportunity, please make sure to go over to the Strategy Lab. Right now, I think I'm up pretty well. We did a great maneuver last week where we picked up, actually shorted the double short EEV and made about 110 points on it. And right now, it's going to change every day, but I think at the end of last week, we finished up 4%. I think we're about 33% ahead of the markets right now from August 1st to now. So, you know, I'm pretty pleased with what we did right now under the conditions that we have to trade. So if you are learning and want to learn how to invest and you want to understand what all these different players are doing, I think it would be kind of cool to put the entire Strategy Lab historically into, let's say, the six people, spread it out into make it one portfolio and see what the performance has been historically. But right now, take a look at what they're doing, because I do a lot of writing and explanation of what they're doing and really how they're doing it, and give you the ins and outs of their strategy. So for now, I hope to see you in D.C. If you haven't, just a reminder again, if you live anywhere in the area, make sure to write in here to ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, because we are actually hosting a little cocktail party on Thursday evening, which is going to be, I believe it's the 7th of November, and 7 o'clock in the evening at in DC. If you want to find out more information about that, I'd love to meet you. I'm giving away some free books there. And if you haven't had the opportunity to be at one of these money shows, you may want to check that out. And for those of you that are pretty disgusted with your performance and your portfolios, and you're looking for an alternative, I've mentioned this before, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy is up and running, and we're doing really well. And if you want to learn more about that, make sure to check it out. In the there's a 14 minute discussion, a virtual tour, if you will, that we put up on the site. You'll find it. Just go to the Disciplined Investor and just click on the link that looks for the virtual tour of the Managed Growth Strategy. With that, we're going to say goodbye till next week. We have Nouriel Roubini, the Dr. Doom, who predicted much of this mess in the markets, coming on, at least scheduled for next week, and a few other surprises in store for you for the end of the year. So make sure to stay subscribed, stay tuned, tell a friend about the Disciplined Investor. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. And thanks for sending all your emails and being a part of this thing that we're trying to accomplish to make you all better investors and to make you disciplined investors and to make sure that we all are very, very profitable in the bad times and the good. Thanks for listening to episode number 81. This is the Disciplined Investor, Andrew Horowitz. See you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.